In making that anthology, you seem to have tried hard not to anthologize poems that were previously anthologized, and also you seem to have had an emphasis on more recent work. Is that correct?
Yes, we definitely did. We wanted to show what people were writing now. So we tried in all cases to take the newest work. And of course, sometimes that meant, at least for me, that it was not my favorite work of the poets necessarily. But we wanted the book that we didn't have when we were young poets, where somebody could hand a young woman poet and say, this is what's happening out there now. This is the best stuff that's out there, and shows you a range of it. That's what we were really trying to do. And so we were also concerned with how the poems spoke to each other in the book. So we had that in mind as we were choosing poems. It was great fun. I mean, it was hard, but it was great fun. And we got everyone in the book that we wanted, with two exceptions. So I felt pretty good about that. I bet you know who the most, you could think of who the most glaring omission is, who's not in there. There's one that just, it kills me that we don't have her.
Uh-huh.
Do you know who it is?
Are we going to keep this a mystery?
Well, I was thinking, you don't have Carolyn Forché, do you?
We do.
Forché, okay.
I think she's in there.
So it's, and okay, so who is it?
Gluck. And she was lovely about it, but she wrote us a letter and said that she knows she's a minority voice and she thinks it'll be a great project, but she has a principle. She will not appear in women's only anthologies.
It's interesting.
It was very interesting, and it really broke my heart because I think she is a major poet, and I think she's a huge omission. Most everybody was great. I mean, people were very generous.
Did you find yourself in, I'm thinking of someone who is in the anthology that is very influential in the same way Gluck is, which is Joy Graham, who seems to be ubiquitously influential and sometimes perhaps even deleteriously influential, in that I've noticed some poets, I won't name them, but some women poets who seem to be working very hard to try and bring the Graham influence into their work where the Graham influence is not exactly at home. Did you find in your selection of very influential poets like that, that you were looking for the influential poems or for the poems that you loved by that?
We didn't think in terms of that. And just as we said in the introduction, we were not attempting at all to be canonical. We weren't looking to do that. So no, we picked the poems that were, our first criteria was excellence, and then we wanted sort of newer work. And then, as I said, there was concern with what else was in there, how they spoke to each other, how well they kind of represented what the poet was doing at the moment. You know, it's interesting because I don't think I write remotely like either Graham or Gluck. Yet they are two of the poets that I will often read to kickstart my own writing, even though I don't think you could look at my work and say, and they're so different from each other too.
Yes.
So I don't know in terms of influence how that works actually. I haven't really figured that out myself, but I think it's different than imitation, which is more what you're talking about, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or trying to be consciously postmodern, I suppose, is really one of the things that we have to be postmodern, so there is that.
Just sort of are, yeah, by definition,
right? There's a comic element to that. But on the other hand, there do seem to be people who are working very hard to create some sort of special effect in that regard. And it's theory-derived or theory-based, and perhaps features some of the more exotic elements of Graham's poems, the lacunae, the hyper-self-consciousness, you know, things like that. And no, I don't see that in your work. I don't see an imitation of that kind of thing at all.
It seems to be a curious time for poetry, and maybe the generation of women writers suffers from this, and I would say suffers from this maybe even more than, you know, male writers of the same generation. It's just that on the one hand, there's a huge movement towards that kind of postmodern fragmentation in poetry that Greg is talking about. And then on the other hand, I know especially with student poets, there's a real interest in poets of voice, poets who are user-friendly.
Right,
you know, people like Billy Collins or Denise Duhamel, who, again, through a quality that's sort of an extension of some of the spirit of the New York School poets, are writing a poetry that is in some ways sets itself into opposition to the poetry such as you write, you know, like Larry Levis's poems, you are interested in looking unflinchingly at loss, at human frailty, human cruelty. And I know that your work, and maybe like Larry's work as well, is not going to appeal to an audience looking for an accessible and tonally lighter poetry. But then, on the other hand, I wonder how you feel about the fact that that very quality of your work is going to limit the number of readers you have in an already very atomized world of poetry.
Yeah, I know, and I'm totally unfashionable, because if you want something real accessible, I'm probably not that. But if you also want something real super sort of intellectual, I'm not that either. I don't care. No. I mean, I don't mean to be glib, but I'm still surprised to have any readers. I never thought of poetry as a way that I was going to, you know, have readers. And it's just sort of seems like a lovely surprise that there are any out there. I don't know. Plus, it's, you know, I don't think you really have that much of a choice. It's not my nature. I'm not an intellectual. I'm not an academic. It's one of the things that's been strange about having my first full-time job at a university is that, you know, I'm so keenly aware of that I'm not an academic. You know, I love my job. I love being there, but it's a whole different way of looking at life. And in terms of the really accessible poems, some poets can pull that off, and they're still wonderful poems. I can't do that. I need to be doing more with the language. That's what satisfies me when I'm working. The other is it's not interesting to me.
Brings me to another question. I know that you wrote poetry for a really long time before publishing your first book, and I think it's become increasingly the case that a lot of poets who are 40 or above are not publishing first collection until they reach that age. And can you talk a little bit about the development of your career in the years before you published Muse?
Well, I always wrote. I mean, when I was 10 years old, I remember being in the library and thinking, I want a book up there. I want my name on the spine, always. It's all I ever wanted to do and all I ever did. But I never told anybody. I was not in the literary magazine. I thought it was enormously arrogant to imagine I could do that. It was just a secret thing for me. And I was always writing poems, but I thought I especially could not be a poet, because poets were clearly men, and they were mostly dead, and they were Eliot and guys like that. So I thought, even though I was always writing poetry, I thought, well, maybe I could be a fiction writer. That seemed to me more attainable. And basically, that's how I did it on my own until I went to college. I went to State University of New York at Cortland, and Paul Blackburn was there, a poet who, it makes me very sad, people don't know much about, because he was not only a good poet, but he was a wonderful man. He was so kind. And I heard this real poet was there, and he was doing a workshop, and I thought, well, and I was dropping out of school, flunking out at this time. And I went in to see him, and I walked into his office, and you have to picture, I'm 18 years old, I come in barefoot, torn jeans dragging on the ground, giggling, every other word I say is man, just a complete, looked like a little hippie airhead. What I didn't know is that Blackburn was already very sick and was soon to die. And he asked me to write him a sample of writing, and I did, and I gave it to him. And he was so encouraging and so kind, and he said, yeah, you can sit in on the workshop. I don't care if you flunk out. You're welcome. That was an enormous gift to me. You can imagine. I mean, it made me think, well, maybe I really could do this. And then the next fall, when it was going to happen, he, of course, had passed away in the summer. Then I just continued kind of doing it on my own, dropped out of school, got married, had a baby, got divorced, got married again, the whole deal. Was always writing the whole time. Tried for about, I would say I spent 10 years self-teaching. I went and I read every poet I could find. I tried to teach myself meter with the Penn Warren Brooks book, if you can imagine. I mean, that was so daunting. Of course, I got almost nowhere with that. It was just horrendous. Took a creative writing class at University of Texas, Dallas, with a poet I'll let remain nameless, because he was the model for me of what you should not do. Complete egotist, very cruel, almost kept me from writing. Then moved to Omaha, saw they had an undergraduate writing program, a BFA. and worked up my courage after first making sure I could transfer credits to the English department if I couldn't cut it, and where I was absolutely blessed to meet Art Homer, who is a wonderful poet and just the most generous teacher, wonderful man. I mean, he taught me not only the craft, but he taught me how to be, what it really meant to be a poet, to be a decent human being, and to be, you know, to look at it as your work. Art used to say he worked in a wire factory for years. And he used to say, you know, when I was working in the wire factory with this and this, making the wires, it's the same thing as the poems. You know, I just, except now it's language. And it was such a great attitude. It was so unromantic and you didn't have to be special to be a poet. You just had to be someone who loved language and did the work. And that completely liberated me. So then I started writing really seriously. And the other gift that Art gave me was he believed that as a poet, it was your job to send the stuff out and get rejected. And so he had me, as an undergraduate, just sending my stuff out. You know, it started to get published, and I had some things published in magazines when I went for my MFA. And, you know, just kept writing and sending it out, like we all do.
Did you have a number of close calls for you?
Tons, you know. I got all those contest things where you're either the finalist or one of the finalists or a semi-finalist, and you get this nice note, and, you know, you, of course, cling to it, and then you get more and more despairing. Well, let's see. I think I was out of graduate school 10 years when Muse got published. Now, I had before that, I had Peru, which was published in the Agni series, which it's too bad Grey Wolf and Agni couldn't do that anymore. It was such a great idea, and it was such a nice way for first collections to get out there. But that's, you know, that's economics.
Do you see anything differently now in how you conceive of poetry or go about composing poems than you did when you started out? Do you see yourself doing things differently?
Well, I think since the book came out and since I had quite a bit of good luck, I've gotten some nice recognition and people have been kind. And, you know, on the one hand, of course, that's great and it helps you have a certain amount of confidence. But on the other hand, I've had a lot of trouble writing since the book came out. I think because, I don't know how to explain it, the bar is raised in some way. And also I'm 52 and I guess of a morbid disposition, so I'm very conscious of life being short and could be very short, you know, but even if it's not abbreviated, it's still not that long to go. And I was always serious about my work, but I feel a seriousness now much more so than I did before, which may not be a good thing. It may be part of why I'm having trouble getting anything finished. There's an innocence when you're first learning, you know, and you just think if you could do it at all, you're just so thrilled. And once you know, well, yeah, I can do the craft. I don't want to write one of those millions of adequate poems that you see in all the journals. Probably the result of that is to write nothing.
There are some people who one wishes would write more of those nothings and be a little more careful and caring about what they produce.
I mean, I don't mean to sound arrogant about that.
I don't think it sounds arrogant at all.
And not that it's, you know, easy for me to even write an adequate poem. It just seems like the longer I write, the harder it gets, not the easier.
I think there's a period when eventually that dynamic changes. It just takes a while.
Really?
Suddenly, it's not so much that it gets easier, because it always gets harder.
Right.
But the delight that accompanies being able to write, I think, returns. And I think for a lot of writers, it may be that that delight goes away for a certain period. It's usually after a first book is published, and it doesn't come back for a while. But it does come back.
Any advice on how to get there faster?